Commentary is for general information purposes only. Clients should seek professional advice for their particular situation.
It's actually not even our quote. I just realized I stole it from Jamie Dimon. If you make the mistake of looking back too much, you aren't focused enough on the road in front of you. Brad Paisley. Many of us have fond memories of the family piling into the car and embarking on a road trip to a desired destination. These memories have likely become even fonder after our experiences over the past 2 years. Often, the journey would be temporarily sidetracked by pit stops, some that were expected, going for gas, grabbing food, and some unexpected, someone's small bladder, a speed trap. Yet despite these short-term setbacks, we would inevitably reach our destination and the roadblocks experienced along the way were forgotten. We envision the investment landscape for 2022 to be like that of a road trip. As we will outline, when we assess the growth in an inflationary environment, we believe the landscape in 2022 will provide a good backdrop for global markets. However, the ride will have many pit stops along the way. If we experience any setbacks along the way, we believe that investors are likely better rewarded if they maintain an optimistic view of the road ahead. Here's how we expect the trip to go. Listen on. This is Investments Unplugged. Thank you for joining us on Investments Unplugged. My name is Malkan Nia, Co-Chief Investment Strategist at Manulife Investments. And as always, I'm joined here with my friend and colleague, my partner in crime, the other Co-Chief Investment Strategist, Kevin Hedlund. Welcome, Kev.
Thanks, Malkan. Excited to talk about our outlook for 2022.
Yeah, so let's get started. So when we were putting together our themes and our view for 2022, this idea of a road trip popped into our heads. We're going to pile into the car. We're going to this destination that is going to be positive. Positive global economic backdrop and earnings backdrop. But there will be pit stops along the way, especially next year. There's probably going to be several. But despite these pit stops, we think when we look back on 2022, it will be a positive environment for investors. Let's get started in terms of the way we look at the world. In a very, very big picture perspective, we look at the world through two lenses. One is growth and the other one is inflation. And once we have a good grasp on what we believe is going to unfold, then that's where we come up with our capital market assumptions. So let's start with growth. Now, when we look at the global growth environment next year, the theme is global growth, just like earnings, likely peaked in the summer of 2021, but it will remain resilient. And we look at it, as I mentioned, through multiple lens, but one that we want to focus on is global purchasing managers indices. And it's a gauge of manufacturing in 50 plus countries across the world. We like it because it's real time and it has a very good see-through in terms of earnings. And we've received the November data and the data still looks very strong. Yes, not as strong as what it was in the summer, but strong. What are you seeing from the PMIs or other growth metrics, Kev, that give you optimism for the backdrop for 2022?
One of the things that, you know, I think we lived through over the last few months was everyone talking about this notion of weaker data and things are rolling over and past peak. And then they were seeing it in a negative context. And I think it's important to understand that although it's past peak, we've said it's not weak, right? It's slowing down, but that's normal, right? It's a normalization phase. When we look at PMIs, same thing. You know, yeah, they're not as great as they were. They're still quite elevated, you know, in the high 50s, regardless if you look at the market or the Institute for Supply Management, US PMIs, still quite strong. Look at leading economic indicators. So look at the US Conference Board Leading Economic Indicator Index, which is an index of 10 sub-indicators. Very strong, again, past peak, but still showing resilience and very strong data. It actually recently increased over the last period for the end of November. So I think these are perhaps surprising to some who expected this a much weaker environment, but I think a stronger economic environment, both in the US and globally, it is likely going to be here to stay for much of 2022. Pit stops, bumps, COVID, whatever is going to happen. But the trend remains very positive, I think, even though it's slower than the recovery phase that we saw over the last 20 months or so.
each one of these countries published their own executive summary of what's happening in the underlying economy. When going through these, when you look at the broader global executive summary, I thought one line was very, I think, powerful for me is, companies globally, they said as they finished the year, they forecast on average that production will be higher 1 year from now. So as we go into this time next year, November 2022, they actually have a high degree of confidence in terms of their production. They have highlighted there's headwinds. We all know what they are. A lot of them, specifically with manufacturing, link to supply chain stresses. But they also see them starting to come off as well. So I think that's a positive, a powerful thing. You've heard us. We believe supply chain issues will be with us for the near term, especially with this Omicron variant. It's probably going to put more restrictions in place. But we think supply chain issues will be much less of a concern in the second half of next year. We always quote, it's actually not even our quote. I just realized I stole it from Jamie Dimon. So my apologies. I used to quote it as if it was mine, but his quote is, capitalism always prevails. And if there's money to be made and there's money to be made with these supply chain challenges, capitalism will fill that gap. And when it comes to the leading economic indicators, based on historical trends and the levels that we are at today, a recession at minimum is probably a year to 2 years away. So again, that provides a good backdrop for growth. Have we peaked? Yes. But not being peaked does not mean weak. And I think that's a very powerful backdrop for growth as we go into next year. And then add on top of it, healthy consumer balance sheets. We have healthy corporate balance sheets, cash on the sidelines that can be used for investments, for investing in itself. So we are quite positive, not as positive as last year for the growth environment, but still positive. So let's pivot, Kev, and pivot to inflation. Another thing I think from our team's point of view, similar to supply chain, yes, inflation is likely in the process of peaking, trending down. You talked to in terms of our inflation model and our inputs and what we believe, but I think this is going to be very similar to supply chains, where as we go into the second half of next year, yes, inflation will be above the 2% that we've experienced pre-COVID, but we're not going to be in this 4, 5, 6% range. More importantly, that will be risk off for equities and fixed income. If anything, inflation coming down will be supportive for those two asset classes. So tell us what we are seeing from inflation with our model, Kev.
There are some factors that are going to be less inflationary or less upside pressure, right? Think about wage growth, think about oil growth. The growth rates are slowing, which should indicate that inflation should moderate. Again, we're not saying transitory, we're saying enduring, just less high than it is right now. So we're, you know, maybe we're near peak or we're close to peaking, and it should kind of, I like to say, let the air out of the balloon slowly. It will come down. Of course, as supply chain disruptions last longer, that becomes a little issue, I guess, when it comes to inflation and the upside price pressures. But again, we do believe that will slowly abate throughout next year. When we look at our inflation model, we have four inputs in our inflation model that tries to give us some sense of trend in inflation. The first one being owner's equivalent rent, which is the price of shelter. So it equalizes either whether you rent or own a property or your main shelter. We have oil prices on West Texas Intermediate, of course. Wages on Atlanta Fed, wage growth. And lastly, the U.S. dollar index, DXY. And it's important to understand, when we look at the DXY or U.S. dollar index, when it's falling, that is actually inflationary, meaning that the price of imports to the U.S. cost more with a weaker currency. And that's the case of any country. If they're importing goods at a weaker currency, it's going to be inflationary, meaning it costs more. Now, when we look at our inflation model, this time last year, looking at 2021, we said inflation is going to be likely enduring. It's not transitory. It's going to stay elevated based on very conservative estimates of inputs. We were right. And it is higher than expected and longer than expected. We do believe it's a little too high right now, and it should come down. But looking at our inflation model, it's likely going to remain above 3.5% through the first half of next year, and then still stay above 3% for most of the rest of next year. So we're not saying back to 2%, may even not get down to 2.5%, but it will not remain or should not remain at 6%+, which is important. And if we get some easing pressure that will perhaps help the overall narrative for a positive economic backdrop, positive earnings backdrop, and positive market backdrop.
We've been sharing this view with some advisors in our year-end meetings, asking us why inflation is going to remain above the historical or the near-term historical trend. It really comes down, I think, when we think about it, is wages and food inflation. Wages are sticky. When they go up, they stick. It's very hard to raise minimum wage or increase your wage and then 6 months later say, sorry, we're cutting it. It just doesn't happen. So that's going to be one factor that's going to keep inflation stickier. And the other one's food. And there's a whole host of supply chains, dollar, weather involved with that. And that's unlikely to abate. I think we've all noticed when we talk about inflation, we all have noticed the inflation costs within our food. And that's likely to continue next year. So outside of those, we think there's going to be not as strong as inflation pressures. In a nutshell, when we go into 2022, when we look at growth through a whole host of lenses, we see a good environment. We see one that is going to have challenges, but the trend is upwards. Again, we said two step forward, one step back. Next year is going to be very similar to that. And we'll get to this too, like the Omicron, right? This is a one step back right now. We're all unfortunately experiencing. We're recording this a couple days before Christmas, but it's a one step back. But generally, growth will be good next year, supportive of global earnings. And then on top of that, when we look at inflation, yes, above the historical trend, but coming down from the very high levels today and unlikely to be as much of a headwind for whether it's consumption or whether it's earnings in the second half of the next year. Okay, great. How do we make money from that? That's what ultimately matters to our clients. Let's start with equities, obviously. I can hear all the bond people booing because they always feel like they're taking the backseat to equities, but equities are sexy and higher returns. Let's start there, Kev. Talk to us briefly in terms of the team's view, in terms of the equity market next year, in terms of this normalization that we keep hearing across, I guess, financial media, in terms of what that means and what that means for markets in 2022.
The normalization, I think that's the word du jour. It seemed like an overused cliche, but it makes sense. And you think about it, okay, we have the recession, we have the recovery, and these are typically very fast, very, moving. We could argue it was a V-shaped recovery. And now we're entering in that phase of that normalization where things are more normal, right? Economic growth, more normal. Inflation, more normal. Earnings growth, more normal. Not bad, just less good. And we think it's going to remain still very strong and probably in the teens level, where it's probably a little optimistic, earnings growth mid-teens next year. It seems a little above consensus. But I still think when you look at all the inputs and look at how things are going, there's still demand there, and there's still a lot of room for companies to grow their earnings at a very solid pace. And one of the things we look at is our proprietary nuts and bolts index. And that is really just an aggregate of a lot of manufacturing indices across the US. And when we look at manufacturing, it is a really good predictor of earnings growth. It's very, very stable and long-term predictor of earnings growth. And we still see this, nuts and bolts index showing solid data. And when we look at it, yes, again, it's rolling over. However, it does still indicate earnings growth in that mid-teens level. And if earnings growth continues to grow at that level, we would expect still solid equity returns in 2022.
I don't know why my mind went that way, but when you were talking about V-shaped recovery coming out of the March 2020, right? And I remember going back then, and I think what everyone was trying to do was trying to apply an alphabet to the type of recovery. And I think looking back, it's interesting that really there's no alphabet that really related to it. I think the closest was V. But V, like as I'm going through with my daughter right now, teaching her how to write letters and stuff, is a V, when you look at the angles, that wasn't what we experienced. The angle was much, much more tight. So there wasn't even an alphabet to be attributed to that. It was, I don't know why that's, I'm thinking of that now, but I think we're in the markets, we're all trying to be cute sometimes in terms of short-term forecasts. And ultimately, they never pan out, those short-term forecasts, right? So I think that's another really good example of that. Let's move on to TSX, because you talked about the S&P in terms of TSX earnings. Again, we use a whole host of metrics. Another good one is when you look at the change in the S&P TSX earnings, like 3 months year over year versus the price of oil, there's a very strong relationship. So we saw earnings because of oil increasing this year, earnings going up, and that unfolded. Now, in this environment where oil is in this $70 to $75 at the time of recording, very similar to the other global earnings backdrop, is not as good as what it was last year. I think we were talking about it, Kev. What was different last year maybe to this year is when we ranked the world, US, Canada 1A, 1B, and international being 2. And as we go into 2022, given where price of oil is, yes, we think the path of least resistance is upward for oil because we are optimistic. We think it's a two-step forward, one-step back. But we're not likely going to be at 100, 110, 120 to really boost up the broader TSX earnings profile. So we were talking about when we rank globally the world, still US, but international slides in at 2 and then TSX at 3. Not a bad return, but just from a relative return perspective, that's where we would rank the world.
Well, let's just talk about valuation and just on equities, because I think valuation is important. And we discuss it all the time. And valuation is not as important on a short-term one-year time frame, but we do have to be cognizant of valuation as it could, you know, add to returns or it could detract from returns. And where we are right now with price-earnings ratios, we expect trailing price-earnings ratios to contract slightly. But over history, when earnings growth in the U.S. is roughly 10 to 15%, the PE multiple contracts one multiple point. So very little influence on returns over the year. So if we're just looking at U.S. equity data, because it's obviously the most robust data we have, it really looks like it will be not much of a headwind. It will moderate slightly, but it won't add too much, which leads us again to our return assumptions around earnings growth with risk to the upside. I think we never discount, you said capitalism, never discount momentum. And I think right now there's a will to move the markets higher. We're seeing volatility near term right now, but you got 1-2 days down and boom, there's a rally and a rebound as buyers are trying to buy in on a dip. So I think there's definitely a will to buy right now. And this probably relates a lot to fixed income and where we are in fixed income and asset allocation, and say, if fixed income is not going to give us much, we're better off buying equities and taking the risk of equities because we have better upside. So maybe that's some of the impetus to add to equities. But I think there's a lot to talk about in terms of fixed income and what we experienced this year and where we're going next year.
Yeah, and before we go to that, I think one of our big themes for next year is quality earnings. We're kind of seeing that unfold actually in the most recent quarter in terms of earning releases. When we did this, Kev, I think 4 weeks ago, we were basically looking at the performance over the last 2 months, basically over the earnings season in the U.S. of companies, and we ranked them based on their quartile ranking of their earnings growth. And what you saw, there was a clear difference between the first quartile, like basically the return profile. How would I say this? Transitioned lower as you went towards your fourth quartile. So first did well, the best, second did good, third did less, and then fourth was actually negative. Well, Kev, I ran this the other day, and it's actually amazing given the sell-off, is the first quartile continues to be rewarded, but the fourth quartile has got penalized even more. So if this trend next year continues, there's going to be bumps along the way. When they happen, it's these fourth quartile earnings growth companies that are going to get rocked. And I think that trend continues next year. Now, you may say, what's quality earnings? Companies that their earnings can remain resilient regardless of the economic cycle, right? Whether they're coming out, whether it's normalization, businesses that can invest in organic growth. They can expand their margins regardless of what inflation is doing. And then pricing power, and these are just a few, but we get the question. These are just some of the things that we would highlight quality earnings. But we think it's going to be a big theme for portfolios next year in the equity space. Now let's go into fixed income. In a big nutshell, we think inflation expectations are going to be coming down, but still remain elevated versus pre-COVID levels. We think the path of least resistance is higher across the term structure. For the 10-year, let's say, for example, the path of least resistance is upwards. But we have challenges thinking that they're going to be materially higher from these points. If we think growth has peaked, yeah, I know tapering and all that, but history would suggest the experience of what yields do throughout that process is different than what actually happens. So there will be headwinds for fixed income in a rising rate environment, but I think a lot of that pain has already been experienced. So you're starting 2022 with some headwinds and challenges, but your starting point is higher because your yields are a bit higher across the world in terms of credit. But where are you taking the risk? This is where one thing Kevin and I, this was the biggest change in our model portfolio, was in for the search for yield in a low interest rate environment. Solutions advisors across the board have been taking on more high yield risk, which made sense last year and a year before that. But given where spreads are today, given where yields are today, not that it's not a good opportunity, but you have to look at it in terms of how much it occupies within your fixed income. So Kev, talk to that, because I think this is a big theme for next year. So if we're talking about quality earnings from the equity side, this type of risk on our fixed income in terms of an umbrella is also important.
I think the fixed income is really important next year as it was this year. And one thing, of course, is it's very rare to see 2 years of or two consecutive years of negative returns in fixed income or broad fixed income. So that is probably a good news story next year. But also we have to temper expectations. You know, if we're looking for total return, the return profile of the high yield or corporate credit space is not as good as it was last year. You know, we talked about this much over the year, probably since mid this year, talking about not much meat left on the bone. And I saw this chart that I really loved, so I recreated it. And what it was is the looking at the historical spreads of high yield and investment grade bonds and rank them on a percentile basis. So where are they today relative to their history? And right now, spreads have increased or widened a little bit over the...
Are we talking 5 years, 10 years? What time period?
So since the beginning. So 1996 is the historical that we have for data on high yield bonds. So going back to 1996 is the data. Fairly long period. We're looking at 25 years.
Yeah, long period.
And we have seen some widening recently on the volatility of the equity market space. And even with that volatility, spreads right now, both investment grade and high yield, are roughly around the 23rd percentile. So that would say that over its 25-year history, 75%+ of the time, spreads have been wider. Now, when spreads are as tight as they are, that indicates almost that they're expensive, meaning their valuation is elevated. There's not much return to come from. Most of the return will be driven by yields. Now, granted, if you're looking for a better yield than traditional vanilla, you know, government bonds in North America or Canada or US, yeah, you know, I would still be attracted to high yield and invest grade. And that's why we maintain an allocation to those at that asset class in our portfolio or in our model portfolio. If you're looking for that total return and trying to chase return to fixed income, this is not the environment to chase returns in fixed income. If you're looking to generate more return, you're better off in equities for that elevated risk. You're not being compensated for taking absolute high yield risk in your portfolio. This is where we think it's important to be flexible, important to be able to pick your spots, you know, be issuer specific. You know, we talk about it's a stock picker's market. I would say it's a bond picker's market. You know, you can still have high yield, but you want to be in the right areas of high yield. You don't want to take on too much risk because, again, you're not being paid to take on that risk and it doesn't make sense.
Where we are leaning today, and I can't see us changing this too much, is keeping the asset allocation the same. So 65% equity, 35% fixed income, a slight overweight to equities at this point. And then not making any changes in terms of our regional exposures. So keeping them the same. Again, that quality earnings theme, we haven't had to make any changes because generally at Manulife, through our portfolio managers and also through our sub-advisors, there is that emphasis on quality earnings. So we haven't had to make a change on that end. But that's, I think, the theme on the equity side is positive. Put some focus on quality earnings. And then on the fixed income side, what we did do is we reduced our high yield, added it to basically core solution, really providing an umbrella, because what we found was, or what we felt was, given the high yield weight increase over the last year and a bit, we really didn't have that umbrella in the event that we are wrong, right? Like, we're not, my wife will tell me I'm always wrong, but like from an investment perspective, thankfully I'm a little bit more correct, but we're always like, no one's perfect. The key is when we're wrong, not letting those mistakes be headshots for performance. So we think that decreasing our high yield weight at levels that were pretty high down and adding that to a core bond solution gives us that umbrella in the event it rains. And if it rains, equity markets might sell off, will likely sell off, and we can use that portion of our asset allocation as a source of cash. High yield will sell off with equities, obviously not as much, but they'll also be down, whereas the core solutions may be flat or even positive, and we can use that as a source of cash depending on how bad the sell-off is. But that's, I think, the major changes within the model portfolio going into 2022. But generally, we're very positive on terms of, when we look back at this performance, we think we're going to be pretty happy with it.
I think it's important to understand, again, in this normalization phase, equities will outperform or should outperform fixed income. But it's important to remember why you own fixed income in a portfolio. You know, if you're going 60-40, 65-35, a lot of people say, well, why would I own fixed income, right? Equities outperform, I don't need fixed income. Your fixed income allocation of your portfolio is for that just in case. As you said, that umbrella in case it rains, right? We can't guarantee when it's going to rain. It's, you know, maybe a high probability, low probability. But having that umbrella in your car just in case is always a good thing, right? It's that insurance. And that's what fixed income in this environment does for a portfolio. Outside of last year, well, even last year, again, if you were in credit, you made some good money. Over the last, you know, probably 5+ years, there's always been an environment where you could make really good returns out of fixed income. And this is probably one of those environments where it's not about the return, it's about the protection. And that's what we have to remember. Fixed income is not about generating return, it's about protecting. Should we get more pit stops, more bumps along the way? That's expected. And that's that fixed income should protect you in that environment.
Yeah. And I think that's a good transition, Kev. You said pit stops. So let's not go through them too much into detail, right? Let's try to keep this somewhat rosy, but potential pit stops along the way. One is a policy mistake by global central banks. The other one is what we're experiencing today, the impact of a COVID-19 variant we're seeing with Omicron right now. There's shutdowns of travel, economies, not to the full extent we saw 2 years ago, but we're getting some of that again. Again, this going back to our theme, 2 steps forward, 1 step back. Omicron is unfortunately 1 step back, but we will get through this. And at some point early next year, we will be on the path of a 2 step forward. Another pit stops along the way is the fear of inflation impacting consumption in a material way. We have U.S. midterm elections in November. And then last but not least is geopolitical risk. I was thinking about these pit stops a couple of days ago, Kevin. I always think of the one, I don't know why I thought of this, but we did a family trip to the Keys and we went to the Cheesecake Factory, and long story short, someone had too much cheesecake and we had to do an unexpected stop because one of the kids was throwing up. And
I thought it was you.
It wasn't me, actually. But I think after I was happy, what was that one movie where one kid, they were eating the pie and then Stand By Me? And then once one person was throwing up. Do you remember that movie or no?
There's a contagion effect sometimes, you know?
Yeah, no, let's not get into a gag reflex conversation. But, you know, that was an unexpected pitfall. And we've kind of laid out what we think are going to be the pitfalls or pit stops. And in all likelihood, it's going to be something that we're not even aware of today.
There's always unexpected outcomes during the year. You know, whether it's personal life, professional life, markets. And again, you have to expect the unexpected. I know it's a terrible cliche, but be prepared. You know, and that's important to understand that. And I think if you're well prepared, well diversified in portfolio, have positive but realistic expectations for portfolio returns next year. As you said, I think point to point from January 1st to December 31st, 2022, I think we're going to be very, very happy with our outcomes at the end of the year. Again, there's going to be twists and turns and bumps along the way, but at the end, we're going to get to our destination. I think we'll be quite happy. And I look forward to this year. I look forward to 2022. I think it's going to be a good year. Hopefully we get a little bit more normalization in our lives and not just the markets. I think it's going to be a good year. I'm still optimistic despite what's going on right now in our personal lives.
Yeah, I agree. I think when you look at equities, it's all about quality, but returns will be good and above average. And from a fixed income side, make sure you have that umbrella within your fixed income in the event that it rains. So maybe just to end off, Kev, maybe because it's the year of being thankful, I'm kind of putting you on the spot because we didn't talk about this, but and maybe I can start. I mean, in terms of what you're thankful of from 2021, I think for me, I think the past couple of years, I'm thankful for technology. Why is I think our lives would have been a lot more challenging and depressing if we didn't have technology. I think technology has helped keep in touch with whether it's your parents, family, colleagues. Kev, we had dinner, the two of us and Philip, and we hadn't seen each other in 2 years, right? Physically. This was the first time, but it seems like, well, we do see each other every day. So technology has helped with this, and that's why I'm thankful. Because I think about when SARS happened and they didn't have that. Imagine it was like this back then. It would be very difficult. So thank goodness for technology. How about you? Do you have one? Have you thought of one? Or?
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. Like, it's nice to be able to see that. I'm thankful I have, you know, I have a family and I'm able to see people. I can't imagine, you know, a colleague of ours is lives on his own in an apartment and he gets to see his family, but he has to go out. But, you know, it must be hard for people who, you know, live alone, when, especially when we're closed down. I'm also thankful of the work we do and how flexible it is, and the fact that, you know, other than not traveling, it's been kind of just steady Eddie. You know, it's just we continue to do our job. And I think we're very, very fortunate in what we do in terms of our jobs, and that we can work from home, over Zoom, over other mediums. And I think that's important and it's great. And not a lot of people have that flexibility. So I think I'm very, very thankful for that. And it's, again, I constantly say how lucky I am to do what I do and have the ability to continue to do it despite what's going on outside.
Yeah, absolutely. And couldn't agree more. So with that, Kev, maybe that's a good place to stop on 2021 as we go into 2022. As we outlined, we're optimistic, and not just from a market perspective, but just getting through this craziness that is COVID. We're optimistic, and we wanted to wish all of you listening and your families and friends a happy new year. Hopefully 2022 will provide good health, prosperity, more time with our family than what we've experienced in 2021. It's always better to be err on the side of being an optimist than a pessimist. So thank you everyone for listening. Any lasting thoughts, Kev?
No, just this is going to be live in the new year, and I think it's a great way to start it off. And let's hope 2022 is even better than 2021. Hard to do from a return perspective, but I think we always hope that the next year is better than the last.
Exactly. So with that, happy holidays, everyone, and thanks for listening in.
Copyright Manulife. Commentary is for general information purposes only and shouldn't be relied on for specific financial, legal, or other advice. It does not constitute an offer or an invitation by or on behalf of Manulife Investment Management to any person to buy or sell any security. Opinions expressed are those of Manulife and or the sub-advisor of Manulife Investment Management and are subject to change based on market and other conditions. Any Manulife funds mentioned are available to Canadian investors only. Manulife isn't responsible for any losses arising from any use of this information. Manulife funds are managed by Manulife Investment Management Limited, formerly named Manulife Asset Management Limited. Manulife Investment Management is a trade name of Manulife Investment Management Limited. Commissions, trailing commissions, management fees, and expenses all may be associated with mutual fund investments. Please read the fund facts and prospectus before investing. Mutual funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. This information does not replace or supersede KYC, Know Your Client, suitability, needs analysis, or any other regulatory requirements, and is intended for Canadian advisors.